responsibilities of what you're doing in this anti-vax area. So here, if we got this clip ready, here is this AP on this RFK lie.
My purpose in going down there had nothing to do with vaccines.
The Associated Press and The Guardian have obtained documents that contradict statements that Robert F. Kennedy Jr. made during two congressional hearings in January 2025. Kennedy was seeking confirmation to his role as the head of the Department of Health and Human Services. He repeatedly told senators that a trip he took to Samoa in 2019 before a deadly measles outbreak had nothing to do with vaccines.
Did it have anything to do with vaccines?
No, it did not. I went there, nothing to do with vaccines.
But a letter from Kennedy to Samoa's then prime minister months ahead of the visit contradicts that. The January 2019 letter uses the words vaccine or vaccination 8 times. Kennedy told the prime minister he thought 2 deaths of young children in Samoa the previous year might have resulted from a vaccine manufacturing issue.
Uh-huh.
He said he wanted his team to investigate, quote, what happened with your MMR vaccines. The prime minister responded, agreeing to the plan and inviting him to come. Kennedy visited in late May 2019. Public health experts in Samoa have said their efforts to address a later measles outbreak were hampered by anti-vaccine activists, some of whom they claim were emboldened by Kennedy's visit. Knowingly giving false testimony to Congress is a crime, but it's rarely prosecuted. Still, the case is likely to raise questions about Kennedy's integrity, especially because senators have already accused him of breaking promises about how he would handle vaccine policy in office. An HHS spokesperson denied that Kennedy's visit was related to vaccines.
Yeah, they're liars. This is, like, there's the evidence is obvious about this. It was clear when Kennedy said that his, even before these letters emerged, that obviously he's a leader of a major anti-vax group. We can take the word for the public health officials in American Samoa that, hey, yeah, those anti-vaxxers that come here, not helpful for our public health efforts. No one cared, really, because it was American Samoa. And now he's doing it to America proper. And he should be prosecuted for lying in front of Congress. He blatantly did. Federal statute of limitations for lying under Congress is 5 years, meaning a new Justice Department under the next president in 2029 could theoretically investigate the case. Definitely should. Department of Health and Human Services, as that report said, did not immediately respond. In a previously issued statement, it said Kennedy's visit to American Samoa was unrelated to vaccines. Any claim or insinuation based on these letters that Secretary Kennedy lied under oath to Congress is not only false, but outright defamatory. So let me say, as somebody trusted with this seat here and the responsibility of it, that I'm going to suggest and insinuate that RFK lied under oath, and that these letters show that he did that. RFK there, bad guy. Not even the last time we're going to talk about him today.
Nope, definitely not.
You know, really as disgusting as anything that we've seen in this, particularly when you look into the anxieties that he spoke to with this Maha Khan that was run, which is that, yes, America does need to be healthy. Healthier. It doesn't need to be doing it by being a lunatic about vaccines, which is what RFK is. We will get to this conversation with Sam and Heather Digby Parton here in a second. But first, our friends from Rocket Money have a question for you. What religious ridiculous subscription did you discover you were paying for? I have been working here for over 10 years now. But I remember about the third year into this, which was my first sort of long-term employment after college, I saw a recurring charge for a resume polishing service that I was paying for the desperation of my unemployment post NYU. And that was just a yearly charge that they got me for that I...
Right.
It's nice just to find out, oh, yeah, it's $89 for somebody to say, yeah, this resume that you sent us, I would change a few things on the formatting. And then I'm going to act, and then we both act like, oh, now I'll certainly be hired. shout out to any young people or recently employed people in that hell. Anyway, I'll get back to this Rocket Money ad right here. Yeah, so this is what Rocket Money does, is it lets you know those sorts of things, how that you should have maybe been on top of, but, you know, it's sometimes hard. You got a lot of things. You got maybe have a huge email inbox. You can't always be aware of some of these subscriptions, particularly when they're not monthly. When they're annual, they all of a sudden find out. But you set up budgets. You set up goals. You can know, like, hey, I just canceled, almost $100 worth of recurring transactions. Now that is $100 a month in my budget that is opened up where it wasn't before. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that helps find and cancel unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so you can grow your savings. Let Rocket Money help you reach your financial goals faster. Join at rocketmoney.com/majority. That's rocketmoney.com/majority. rocketmoney.com/majority. And there will be links in our description for that, folks. Without further ado, here is a short break, and then Sam talking with Heather Digby Parton.
We are back. Sam Cedar on the Majority Report. Emma Vigeland out today. Joining me now, as she often does on Fridays, the proprietor of the blog Hullabaloo and, of course, columnist at Salon.com, Heather Digby Parton. Hello, Heather. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. I'm good. It's hot here in Los Angeles, but I'm getting through it. But well, good to be here.
It's been rainy on the East Coast. Quite a bit. In fact, I've just got back from my vacation. I'm still on a slightly extended, but half of it was rain out. So what are you going to do? But yeah. Be that as it may, the political news marches on. And we are now, I guess, really not even 2.5 months out from the election, 70 days, somewhere in that neighborhood. It is after Labor Day when things usually get going. Labor Day is a little bit late this year. In fact, the latest it can be because that first Monday, or I should say falls on the 7th this year. I guess it's the 7th.
Yeah.
We will get to that in a moment. But over the past couple of days, Donald Trump has basically declared a trade war, if not a Cold War, with the Canadians. And I'm old enough to remember when Michael Moore did a satirical movie about America, the attempt to sort of like gin up an invasion fervor against Canada. And Donald Trump seems to have taken it as if it was like some type of prescription.
It's true. And it's so absurd. It is just incredibly absurd that Canada, which is our second largest trading partner, our closest friend on the planet. I mean, they're just, you know, it's Canada, for God's sakes. I mean, nobody hates Canada. It's ridiculous. This is something that he did upon taking office the second time. I mean, he had his issues. And I think some of this stems from the first term where he felt that Justin Trudeau was just a little too good looking, a little too young, a little too disrespectful. And he just didn't like him. And I think that sort of spurred a feeling of anti-Canadianism in Donald Trump personally. I'm not saying that's what's going on here, but I think that's what started it, where he started, you know, kind of feeling an antipathy toward Canada. And so in the second term, though, from the moment he came in, it was weird, right? I mean, we were all going, what? What are we talking about here? It was Canada's going to be the 51st state. He was going to annex Greenland. We were going after Panama. You know, there was Cuba. I mean, there's all this stuff that's been on the agenda that just seemed inexplicable. Why is he doing this? And, I wrote a piece this week for Salon. I went back and looked at the national security strategy. I don't know if you remember this. It came out in December, just the late December. And it was what they ended up calling the Donroe Doctrine, remember? And that was coined by the New York Post, and Trump loved it. So he called it, you know, it's a play on Monroe Doctrine. But the actual document called it the Trump Corollary to the Monroe Doctrine. That's the official term. And in it, it just, you know, it sort of reiterated the Monroe Doctrine. Nobody can, you know, colonize or, you know, threaten any country in the Western Hemisphere as a threat against the United States, blah, blah, blah. But it went further than that. And I don't think anybody really paid that close of attention to what they were saying, which was essentially the United States now is the premier country of the Western Hemisphere, and we reserve the right to dictate what the countries within the Western Hemisphere will do. And Trump, of course, had already sort of stated that he wanted to annex these countries, Greenland and Canada, for his own reasons. I think he genuinely has a megalomaniacal sort of, you know, vision, global vision, that he's going to be, I don't know, Napoleon or Alexander the Great or something. He's going to actually, you know, acquire land for the United States. I mean, this is the 21st century. We're not doing that. You know, I mean, I guess Russia thinks it can, you know, reacquire Ukraine, and it's not going well for them. But Trump has this vision of him being able to put on the map, you know, his legacy that he acquired Greenland and or potentially Canada for the United States. But there's also a deeper thing there. Now, I don't know whether this was his people backfilling his vision, or whether or not this is actually something that's kind of percolating up through the right wing, you know, foreign policy, you know, thinkers. But in that national security strategy is this idea that the United States has the right to dictate to any country in the Western Hemisphere what it is that they're allowed to do with their own country. In other words, it's a pretty much an oblique attack on the sovereignty of every country in the Western Hemisphere. Well, Canada, Mark Carney sees this, and I think it Justin Trudeau, to go back to him, he told people in Canada before he left, he said, you know, don't sleep on this making Canada the 51st state. He means it. He took him seriously. And I think it was through various discussions they had around trade and other things that he realized that this was actually a real thing. The United States had decided that they had the right to dictate to Canada and perhaps annex it if they chose. And so Mark Carney came in on that, you know, he ran on that issue of the 51st state, and he won. He's also a very, very experienced person in matters of trade and finances. He was the, you know, he was the head of the central bank in the UK and in Canada. So he knows his way around this. He's taken this seriously from the very beginning. And I think you'll remember even in, he gave that speech in Davos in January, which was shortly after this national security strategy was released. And they had made this ridiculous threat on Greenland, and it alarmed the Europeans so much they actually sent troops to Greenland to sort of, they didn't expect they would beat the United States military, but I thought they would, you know, it would show that by having those troops there, that there was an actual military operation happening.
And frankly, I mean, my take on that was they were worried that the U.S. would just land there. And if there was no potential for conflict, I mean, I think like that's what so much of this seems to me to be is we're just going to try and do it. And if there's not enough pushback, then we just create facts on the ground.
And they're doing that with everything, right? Yes. I mean, whether it's voting rights or anything else that they're, you know, immigration, they're just doing it. And then go ahead, if they don't stop us, then we'll just carry on. And I think you're exactly right. That was, and the Europeans were aware of this and went, you know, okay, we better at least put on a show here that there's a response.
Right. I mean, if the U.S. drops troops in there when we have troops, then all of a sudden it's a much more complicated
everyone can
scenario.
See. Yeah, yes. Everyone can see what's going on. Yeah, and I think that's exactly right. And I think I can't remember who it was. Maybe it was Macron. One of the European leaders actually said that. You know, said, look, we had to be there if something happened, so people could see what was going on. So Carney gave that speech, which I think is going to be remembered as an historic speech, in which he declared that there was a rupture in the world order. That people had to band together, the medium powers had to recognize that the great powers, by which he meant, I think, pretty much the United States and China, that, you know, everybody else is, we're kind of having to go on our own now, and it's time for us to make other arrangements, essentially was what he said. And that was a real, you know, it was a shocking speech, but one which I think woke the Europeans up, and he's kind of become the leader of this Trump resistance, and Trump knows this. So, you know, but it didn't stop him. You know, Trump just carries on doing his thing. And so he decided for whatever reason to, you know, throw another bunch of tariffs on Canada, and they and the Canadians behaving like adults said, all right, now come on, let's just sit down and see what we can figure out here. You know, he was abrogating his own treaty, the USMCA, the greatest treaty ever made, right, back in the first term. Now it doesn't exist. And they sat down and they did this, and then Trump just comes in and he has his people go in. And again, I don't know if Trump directed this or whether his people are on just on board with this concept, but they came in at the very end of the negotiations and basically told the Canadians, well, you're not allowed to have any unilateral agreements, trade agreements with other countries with a, you know, that we don't approve, and then gave them a bunch of, you know, stuff about how they were not allowed to enforce the laws, their domestic laws that they have as far as culture and language. And it's a bilingual country. And they're basically saying, no, you don't get to speak French anymore if we don't want you to. And obviously Carney could see what was happening. He could see that this was an encroachment on the national sovereignty of Canada. And he absolutely got up and walked away. And they went, we're not doing this. So here we are. And I don't know what's going to happen. I mean, is Trump going to carry on? He's doing stupid stuff like, you know, renaming Lake Ontario Lake Canada. And they're, you know, they've got, I don't know if you've seen any,
Lake
probably
USA,
not, you've been on vacation.
Or whatever it is.
Is it? I think it's Lake America. Which sounds really stupid. I mean, it just sounds ridiculous. I mean, why not? I mean, it's just dumb. And then he's talking today, well, we've got a Gulf, we've got a lake, and now we just need an ocean. So maybe we'll rename the Pacific and the Atlantic, maybe both. I mean, he actually said that today. He's just so idiotic. But, you know, okay, that's just him showing off doing his thing. But whether or not they're going to carry on with this trade war, which is definitely, I mean, because Carney backed off and said, all right, that's it. It's going to be dollar for dollar reciprocal tariffs. And they're going to go into effect, I think, on September 8th, I think, the day after Labor Day. So who knows where this is going? I mean, I honestly don't know. But it's just, this is, you know, Trump's megalomania actually has some substance to it. There's some things that are happening that he's doing that, you know, and we saw him do what he did in Venezuela. He basically just went in.
And we should say there's some type of massive, as of yesterday, reports of some type of massive deal that the U.S. will get control over a bunch of Venezuelan oil fields. And we should say, when we say the U.S., we're not talking the U.S. Treasury.
No.
We're talking about U.S. corporations. And this is, you know, the question, I tend to believe that when Trump does stuff like this, it is, there is some trade or deal downstream from this where he is making $500 million in something, or somebody's giving him $100 million or $5 million or whatever. Like, I am convinced that they also do have this sort of doctrine. But I also think that, like, his ability to maintain some type of integrity to a doctrine, fidelity to a doctrine, is limited by how much he's personally going to gain from it.
I'm not even sure he knows what the doctrine is. I'm not even sure that he's aware of it, but he is aware of that, which is that, you know, he's got, you know, maybe the boys have something going on down there. Maybe there's something, you know, somewhere's buddy, maybe a witch cop, you know?
What is it? What's it like 1,200 trades in a quarter? I mean, there has to be a whole team of traders who must have, like, their own analysts who are just simply, they're not analyzing anything. They're just front running the market, because the biggest buyer, the biggest player in the world economy, essentially, is telling them, this is what we're going to do. And, you know, buy up the stocks, you know, I don't know, maybe it's lumber stocks, when it comes to, who knows? But it really feels like, all right, so let's talk about the sort of like the fallout from this, right? Because I'm like starting to, divide this stuff into sort of silos in terms of fallout. Like, you know, I have my, like, the EPA or the destruction of the EPA or the FDA or the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau or the IRS or all of these agencies, that is one silo of stuff that, like, we're going to feel the implications of that for a decade more. I don't know. Whether it's like food safety, but just rebuilding those agencies is going to be very, very difficult. The other silo is just sort of like the incredible kleptocracy that he's engaged in, which I would say this Canada stuff. I mean, we're also ruining our relationships going forward. And, you know, we said this in the first Trump term, too. Like, if I'm Europe or any other country in the world, frankly, and I'm looking at America, I'm looking at a very unstable place.
Absolutely.
If you go from like Obama to Trump and then to Biden now and then back to Trump, you're just like, I'm not going to bet on anything that is more than like, a, you know, 12 months out, because who knows where this country is going to go. And you and I live here. We don't know.
It is unstable. It is. That's not a perception. That's a reality. Yeah. We're unstable. We're not a stable country anymore. Clearly.
There may be, at the end of the day, there may be some benefits that come with losing our place as the world leader and the supposed responsibilities that come with that. Who knows? But that's certainly going to, and there's bound to be some negatives, I would imagine, too. But down the road, we'll have a sense. But there's no sense that this is being done with a real plan, it seems to me. I mean, we're going to have supremacy over all these countries in our hemisphere, and we're going to take over their sovereignty. I'm sorry. That's not going to happen either. We've run out of Patriot missiles. We're losing, you know, we're a paper tiger, which this Iran conflict has shown. So there's no reason for these other countries to fear us in an extensive way. You know, maybe Honduras and Guatemala and El Salvador, we're going to send in, special ops, and, you know, we're going to be fighting down there and doing the same stuff that we've been doing with ships and whatnot. But total control seems to be out. The other sort of like silo is just, at the very least, the short-term political implications of this. You know, there's a big race in Michigan, is my understanding, for the Senate. And
it's one in Maine, too.
And there's one in Maine. And this stuff with Canada is not going to go over well with those states.
Lethal.
And maybe not Alaska. I don't know. I got to imagine that's going to be a problem. You wrote another piece this week that Trump just doesn't care anymore about what's going to happen on the Senate and House side. And I think that's spot on. And it seems like it's been that way for several months. He just went down to Texas and criticized Paxton and Abbott for a data center moratorium. And you write in your piece that we're going to have a sort of a midterm Republican convention, and it seems like it's just going to be about Donald Trump.
And he's got an approval rating somewhere between, 32 and 34%. I mean, the guy is not popular. And him putting himself, on the ballot, as he says, just pretend I'm on the ballot. Well, a lot of these Republicans, you just know, they're just going, oh, God, really? This is not. And in the past, you would have had a president in this situation. And we have seen this before, where in the midterm, the president's unpopular. They're trying desperately to save the majority. And they let these people kind of run against the president. They just kind of, he keeps a low profile, and they said, go ahead, say and do what you have to do. Run against me if you need to. We just, whatever. Not with Trump. I mean, that's just not, he can't possibly allow that. So he's forcing himself on them, and he's going to have this big thing. He'll be there both nights, and it's going to be the Trump show, basically. And they'll let these other people come up, and they'll scream communist and socialist and, Muslim or whatever their thing is. But I don't, this is not going to be a very useful thing for them in this election, I don't think. Trump does not care. I don't think that he is, I think he has, a lot of people say, well, he's going to run again. He's going to try and run again. I actually don't think that's true.
No, I agree.
I don't think he's too old. He's too, I think he knows that he's at the end. That's why he's building all these legacy projects, right? It's because he's building his legacy forever. He wants to building himself a temple on the White House ground. He's building the arch of, you know, Trump. He's doing all these things because I think he knows that this is it for him. And I think that he's looking, he's beyond the presidency now. He's looking into the future and he's set, he's trying to set himself up as, you know, the greatest president the world has ever seen or whatever, hoping to do things like maybe annex Greenland or beat Iran. I think he really thought that was going to be a big feather in his cap. He was going to be, you know, I think, and they whispered in his ear, hey, this is going to be great. You're going to be remembered forever as the guy who finally took out Iran. Didn't work out. But I think that's where his head is at. I don't think he, and I don't think he cares about the Republican Party. Interestingly, I don't, you may not have seen this since you're just back, and it was kind of an obscure little moment on social media yesterday. He retweeted a big, long list, and he tweeted it twice about complaints about how the Republicans have failed over and over and over again to fulfill basically his agenda, right? That they didn't do all the things that, that he had promised to do. He retweeted. He did it without comment. He didn't say anything, but he just tweeted it out on Truth Social, and he did it twice. And it occurred to me that he is now in this place where if he loses the election in November, which he's very likely to do, at least in one house, and potentially now it looks like it, there's a good possibility he'll lose the Senate too, that he is he's fine with that. He doesn't care about legislation. He's not doesn't care about the Congress, and he knows they're not going to do anything. And even if they impeach him, he knows they're not going to convict him. So, you know, whatever. The Congress is irrelevant to him. He does everything by executive order and edict now. And he feels like the Supreme Court will, you know, good part of the time they're going to let him do it. So that's fine. And I think that he honestly just believes that it doesn't matter anymore what people, you know, what the public thinks, because he has a belief in himself that whatever he does always winds up with him on top. And a lot of that is because it's true. I mean, I hate to say it, but throughout his life, he's gotten away with everything. Look where he is today after everything
and
he did.
Look, he's made.
Why shouldn't he believe
they
that?
They have made. They, I mean, I don't think we can even calculate what Trump's family and sort of like whatever the first concentric, you know, circle of colleagues, you know, within the sort of like the oligarchy, essentially, they have made billions upon billions upon billions of dollars. He has personally made billions of dollars in just, what are we, 18 months, 20 months into the presidency, 22 months
it's,
into
it's
the
unbelievable.
Presidency. And just to remind people, he will, you know, if there's impeachment, he will get impeached in the House. Even if the Democrats take the Senate, they're not going to have 2/3.
No.
And so by blaming the Republicans for the failure, for failing him, doing the old stab in the back trick, perfected by folks before him. I can't remember what the name in German is of that, of the claim of being stabbed in the back, but he's going to make sure that there's no 2/3, so he's not going to get convicted, like you say, that requires 2/3 in the Senate, and he's going to keep doing exactly what he's doing now, which is there hasn't been a piece of legislation since the so-called Big Beautiful Bill, which was just a massive tax cut. They may try and push in another tax cut, but they probably won't get it if they lose the center of the Senate's even, you know, remotely closer. Yeah. And he's like, well, I figured out how to make a ton of cash anyways. It doesn't matter.
And he's not, he's just not worried that, that there's going to be any accountability for him because there isn't. I mean, you know, let's face facts. I mean, you can try, but, you know, with the Supreme Court ruling about the, you know, immunity for presidents after they're out of office, even all the corruption, all the grift, all the obvious, just blatantly stealing the country blind and doing all these favors. I mean, just the selling of pardons alone is an impeachment, an impeachable offense that should just take him out of office immediately. He's selling them. And what, and he's selling pardons to people, you know, for the highest bidder. And they, and then he's, and these people who are being pardoned owe restitution to all kinds of average Americans. Yeah, he just wipes out the restitution as well. I mean, it's just shocking, one thing after another. You could go on for days naming the various types of corruption that are going on right before us. And he's going to keep doing that for the next 2 years. He's going to take as much money, steal as much money as he possibly can. His sons, I mean, the stuff that I mean, after what they did to Hunter Biden and watching what Don Jr. and Eric are getting away with is just stunning. And he, you know, who's going to stop him? I mean, I know that the Democrats, if they take the House, they're going to hold hearings. They're going to go after Don Jr. and Jared and all the rest of them, you know, and maybe that will have an effect. I hope it does on the election in 2028. I hope it's a meaningful thing and there's a push for reforms and all that kind of stuff. But Trump himself isn't worried about that. And I don't think he's worried about that for his family. I don't think he thinks that anything's going to happen to them. And so he's just going to keep going. And it's, I mean, imagine the freedom there. You have a man who is completely with, you know, no character whatsoever, a complete lack of integrity. You know, he feels persecuted and believes that he is owed all of this stuff because he's been treated so poorly by the American system. And he is now a member in good standing of the oligarchy, the Elon Musks, all the tech bros. He stood there the other day, like the data center thing. You brought that up. I couldn't believe it. This data center thing is an organic grassroots right. issue, bipartisan, springing up all over the country. It's huge. It's meaningful. You know, Abbott knows it. I mean, how yep. these Republican governors know it. They're all going, whoa, okay, you know, let's back off. And Democratic governors, too, who were all, and, you know, they're most people are seeing this for what it is. There's Trump standing there with those guys behind him, all the AI boys, and just going, no, we've got to have those data centers. And he goes down to Texas and says the same thing. I mean, that is a person who does not care about public opinion. You can't tell me he gives a damn. And it's not because, and everybody wants to say, oh, Natalie isn't telling him. He doesn't know what the real issue. He knows about data centers. I'm sorry. He knows, and he just doesn't give a shit. That's all.
I mean, I have to say, the Natalie stuff, I was happy to have missed it on vacation this week for the most part. It is... you know, it's funny. It's titillating. I love to talk about stuff like that as a joke. But at the end of the day, you know, he's a lunatic. She's a yeah. lunatic. They're all lunatics in that.
They're all lunatics.
What far more relevant is frankly, the stuff that they're doing that's going to have long-term implications.
Absolutely.
And what I found, we had the Lindsey Graham's sister, you know, there's no reason to call her anything other than that, because that's what she is, who is not that into foreign policy.
It's not her thing.
It's not her thing. I get it. No, I get it. I totally get it. I think it just in Alaska, Dan J. Sullivan is going to be one of the four running in the, and it's ranked choice voting, but a lot of times people vote just one candidate. So there's going to be two Dan Sullivans. That's a shame. It feels like sort of like building off this notion that Donald Trump does not seem to care. It's almost, I mean, it seems like you could make an argument that he's sort of at this point, like tanking it, like just decided, you know, they're going to lose. And so he's just now building his case against them. And for after the election. And that's what this convention is about. It's not about he may very well think the Senate is already gone or, you know, gone enough, but not enough to get him, you know, convicted in or thrown out of office. But there's a flip side to this. And that may be the case. I mean, I think, you know, I have a feeling if the Democrats take the Senate, they're not going to take it by one. It's not going to be, you know, Fetterman's not going to be in a position to switch and make the difference.
I agree. I think it's going to be more than that.
They're going to take it by more because it's going to mean like a massive sort of like, you know, general wave that is going to have a lot of people cresting over, you know, and and we'll see. But this has also created an interesting dynamic on the Democratic side. And that is, I have never seen anything quite like what we're seeing with this Hassan Piker thing. You know, like I remember Ilhan Omar in 2019, the Democrats stepped all over their big H.R. 1, which was this big omnibus bill that was going to do voting rights and all of these things to deal with Trump. They stepped all over it because they decided it was more important to censure Ilhan Omar. And it went away, you know, after a couple years, essentially, and they realized, like, okay, that was ridiculous, and they all felt bad about it or whatnot. This is more, this seems really, really concerted by the elements within the Democratic Party. I mean, obviously the conservatives are doing this, but we should say this started at the Bulwark. In many respects. I mean, they were talking about this 2 months ago, and it's just sort of evolved, and they keep trying to find something else. Not all of the Bulwark. There's been a couple of people there, obviously, but it has come from the vestiges of Third Way, of the DLC, whatever the modern incarnation of that, and like sort of the more Zionist contingency of the Democratic Party, like the rabid ones. And they are now like... pushing, you know, like the Ossoff was the latest. And I was surprised by this because this is a guy who has been very scrupulously avoiding taking a position on anything that could be an interesting fight. Yeah. He is even like when it comes to like crypto and AI, he's been quiet. It's all been corruption, you know, focused on the Trump administration. And for him to come out and say something about Piker just feels like this operation has been successful in some way. And like, there are people who are afraid the Democrats are going to take the Senate, and they're afraid that more afraid of a significant contingency of those senators being outside of their sphere of influence.
Well, that could certainly be true. I mean, they could be outside their sphere of influence. I mean, who cares? I mean, Hassan Piker is a, first of all, he's a podcaster. I mean, he's not, I mean, at least Ilhan Omar was actually, you know, a member of the, you know, she was a congressional representative. This is just, I mean, I find it really bizarre because I'll be perfectly honest with you. I didn't even know who Hassan Piker was until they decided to make him into a big thing. And I don't think most people did. I mean, he existed there and, you know, I went and then, of course, read about him and realized that he was kind of a, you know, kind of a big deal within one faction. I mean, okay, whatever. I mean, that's the world we live in, right? I mean, this is social media, it's podcasting. There's a whole bunch of people that say a whole bunch of things. And, you know, I mean, the right doesn't sweat this stuff. they don't worry. We've got the biggest nuts on the planet that are, you know, being invited to the White House. I mean, this is, you know, you got people screaming on the White House lawn that Michelle Obama is a man. I mean, they don't care about this. And I don't, I honestly find it a little bit inexplicable, except for what you're saying here. Yes. That's just me as a normal person watching it, right? That there's a concerted effort to try and use him. I mean, he's being used, I think, as a kind of a tool. A weapon in some way to, you know, expose the fact that there's this new faction in the party and that, you know, they're being pretty successful in some places that they're threatened by. And they're threatened by, it has to do, of course, it has to do with Israel and Gaza. But it's bigger than that. It's a, you know, listen to James Carville for 5 minutes. You know, I mean, listen to him. He'll give you a full rundown of why this is the greatest threat to the Democratic Party that, you know, we've seen in, you know, decades. And, you know, I mean, come on, Sammy and I have heard this stuff before. I mean, not quite in this language, but this dynamic, it's so tiresome. It's like, I'm just going, look, I mean, look at Abdul Al-Sayed is obviously that's who, you know, everybody's talking about more than anyone else. That guy is just, he is really good. There's a reason, and it's not just his policies, which, yeah, they're progressive, but, you know, none of it sounds weird to me. I mean, I see it. I might even disagree with him on a few things, but it's like, you know, whatever. I mean, he just seems like a regular progressive to me. Of course, his name, he's Muslim, seems to be a huge problem with a lot of people for a lot of different reasons. And the fact that, you know, he sort of came through this particular, he's a member of this faction. And it's like they just went crazy. They kind of lost their minds.
I mean, Mallory McMorrow's campaign, you know, maybe it was just coincidence, but it's when she went after Piker, it was basically the beginning of the end for her within a Democratic primary. And yeah. And that is, I think, the thing that they realize. They have lost the Democratic base. That the third way, the Democratic establishment, the leadership in many instances.
I'm sorry. They have this lost. Is generational, too, you know.
Yes. And this has a, there is something that, you know, and I've been trying to sort of like, and I've been watching it from afar, been on vacation, but trying to, because look, your average person has no idea. And this is, there could theoretically be a drag on some Democratic candidates because of what they're ginning up. And I mean the Democrats, not the right. Republicans here. I mean, Democrats, if Democrats were united in this, they could swap this away in half a second. I mean, are you kidding me? But in fact, the nexus of, and look, we're seeing it on CNN. Dana Bash is attacking Piker for words that she almost like word for word articulated months ago. Same Ezra Klein also had articulated. Frankly, I did a year and a half ago, 2 years ago with Ethan Klein, some other podcaster, a Zionist. And so this is a concerted effort, and there's a level of desperation here that makes it seem so naked and like almost for the sake of just a handful of donors on some level or.
I mean, that's certainly, I'm sure that's a big part of it. I mean, the thing is that I think you've just hit on something. This level of desperation. I think about James Carville or some of these people. Yeah. I mean, it's about Israel. We can't underplay that. That's actually a huge issue that's roiling the Democratic Party. Although I don't think it's really roiling it that much, because I think most people are going, wow, Israel really, you know, come on, what it's are you doing? You know, I mean, I don't care. I mean, it's not like that's a, where everybody's going rah, rah, net and love Bibi. I mean, that's just not happening in the Democratic Party anymore. I don't think even among average everyday Americans that don't even tune into that issue. So I think that it's overstated that that's a problem among regular people, but it seems to be a huge problem among these elites that are arguing among themselves with that. But it's also this generational change.
Yep.
This is happening. The old guard, you know, whether it's Chuck Schumer or whether it's James Carville, even the reflexive kind of pro-Israel stuff that Joe Biden, you know, the way he talked about. I mean, you and I've talked about this a lot over the last few years because it kind of came up because it was a little jarring, even to me, this kind of shift. And it took me a minute to kind of, you know, get with how our attitudes were changing and how we had to grapple with the new reality that of what was happening in Israel and kind of question our priors on that. So I think a lot of people have done that. But this is about old people being, you know, they're aging out. It's happening. And the younger people have a different view. And it's not just of Israel. It's a more progressive view. It's a different way of doing these. I mean, even a guy like Tallarico down in Texas, who's not involved in any of that stuff, but even he has a different approach. That's a kind of a more inclusive sort of. It's just a fresher. It's fresher, and it's happening everywhere. And I think that is a big part of it. This is the last gasp of that generation of the baby boom leadership that's been with us for far too long, by the way. Yes. I mean, this has been going on since like the early 90s when Bill Clinton came in, and he was young, right? I mean, he was like 42 years old. He's one of the youngest presidents that came in. He was the first baby boomer. And look, I mean, geez, you know, this is 30, 40 years now we've been doing this. It's well overdue. In fact, it skipped your generation. The whole Gen X just went, whatever. You know, we're moving directly into millennials and Gen Z. And I think that is very, very threatening. And these people and a lot of the donors and they're old, too. A lot of them are in the same shape. And then you've got this whole other group, the kind of oligarchy that's kind of lurking out there with a lot of their own interests and a little bit concerned about the progressivism, a little concerned about the fact that, you know, democratic socialists, there's that whole faction that's out there. So this is a big change in the Democratic Party.
And the youngins like the Josh Gottheimers and the Richie Torreses, and even to some extent, Hakeem Jeffries, who are, you know, it's almost like they're the freshmen and the seniors are graduating and they're like, wait, right, we're going to be left alone here because they were our buddies.
Yeah. What am I going to do? Yeah. And I'm just wearing their little bow ties. Yeah.
Seniors. I think you're right about this because it reminds me of when Paul Wolfowitz testified about how the Bush administration and sort of like its circles agreed on, you know, weapons of mass destruction. That was the one thing that we could all agree on. We all had our separate agendas as to why we wanted to invade Iraq and all separate reasons for that. But we all agreed on weapons of mass destruction. And it's on some level like all of these factions within the Democratic Party that are on the losing end of where their voters are. And this new movement that has now shown it is capable. Again, you have to have a very good candidate. But when you do, unlimited amounts of money is no longer effective.
Right.
I mean, that's what El-Sayed showed is that, granted, he is, you know, he's not necessarily a one in a million candidate like a Mamdani.
Right.
But, you know, maybe he's a one in, I don't know, 100,000 candidate.
He's pretty good.
He's pretty good. But you can find a one in 100,000 candidates. And now there's an understanding that like $60 million in a Senate race is not going to defeat this person.
That's
and
right.
And if their policies are aligned with what the sort of like the new consensus is in the Democratic Party and all of these other factions who are on the outs because of their Zionism or because of their corporatism or their
age.
Oligarchy or their age and their understanding of politics.
Yeah.
They're all just decided Hassan Piker is our ticket, is our lifesaver.
Do you think this is going to work? I mean, is this working?
No.
I mean, I honestly can't. I don't think it is.
And I mean, look, I think when they got Ossoff to say something, which is going to, he's going to have, if, you know, like I've said, like he has the opportunity if he was able to move to the left in, you know, in, I'm thinking 2028 now. But this is going to hurt him on some level with some constituencies. And so they have basically forced him into or out of a lane, at least now. You know, look, there's always this general election stuff where I would imagine, I don't think that Piker has said very much, frankly, that is incendiary, particularly in the context of a Twitch streamer, right? Like,
he's a podcast. Yeah, I mean, whatever.
Yes.
Let's talk about Tucker Carlson for a minute.
I mean, Rush Limbaugh got the Medal of Freedom. I mean,
exactly.
But there's always attack towards the middle in the general election. There's still like sister soldier brain in the Democratic Party. This goes way beyond that. And I think what's going to be really interesting is if the deployment of this stuff does nothing.
Yeah.
Because if it does nothing, they have run out of a lot. Like,
right.
They're running out of options because their $60 million in a Senate race is not doing it. They, you know, Hassan Piker just gave them a good opportunity because he's young and he's a guy and he's on.
Oh, he's got the name.
He's Muslim. Oh. Yes. And he's on like a technology that the kids use. I mean, it made it easier, but there's not like, even that is not, it may not work for them. And then they've run out of options because who are they going to demonize? Who, you know, who's going to be the boogeyman for the third way? For the Zionists, like if it doesn't work,
well, that's a good question.
Who, what's left?
Who will it work
right?
for?
Right. I mean, you can't do like they tried Ilhan Omar and it didn't work. And it's like, You know,
well, they tried AOC, they tried the squad. God only knows. I mean, they went after Mamdani at first, and then he's just too good, and they had to back off that. I mean, it's just
failing all over.
There's nothing. What could any of these progressives, if they win, and some of them are going to win in the House and in the Senate, there's just no, they've got the nomination. Yep. The Democrats are on the rise, and they're going to win. And there's going to be a faction in there that's pretty powerful because they have a lot of national attention, and they've got excellent leadership. AOC is I think she's brilliant. She's a great politician. You know, there are others that are going to be that way, too. And there's just not going to be any ignoring this. And I don't, you're absolutely right. I do not know. I mean, I guess they can attack them on some policy, but what? Childcare? I mean, what are we talking? What are they? I mean, and Israel, I guess we'll fight that one out for a while.
Yep.
But I think that one's, I think, at least among Democrats, I think that one's gone. I really do. I mean, I had recently a personal conversation with just some non-political people that I happen to know. We were talking about it. And, you know, they, first of all, they weren't particularly invested one way or the other. But they were clear, just as clear as I couldn't believe how clear they were, just about how, you know, this Netanyahu is just completely out of control. And Israel, their policies, I don't get it.
It's just
and,
become,
you know, they're not, it's just common sense, right? I mean, it's just become
think, honestly,
normal.
That's what it's become for Democratic voters.
I agree.
It's really not even an engagement in the direct issue, just more of like a common sense test. Like, can you tell that the sun is shining as we look out the window? And if we can't agree on that, then, you know, I'm not even going to look into what your policies are. And I think what we're watching now is, and knock on wood, because this may be a little bit of wish casting, but I think what we're watching is sort of like a white knuckled grip that is on power, and they're losing it. They know they're losing it. And they have gone all out, and they have chosen the only thing that they can, you know, do, which is going after a podcaster. I mean, just to tell people how insane this is.
Ridiculous.
It is. I mean, and listen, I also think that Hassan Piker is probably responsible for one or two congressional wins, unseating incumbent, you know, at least one in New York.
How could be?
He's done amazing things in Michigan. You know, it's hard to quantify these things. Definitely powerful on the ground. But the idea of an establishment of the Democratic Party attempting to fight this internecine battle by targeting him, I think it's going to work to some extent, but like there's no, it's almost like, you know, going after Antifa. Like this is decentralized.
Yes. That's exactly right. That's exactly the same thing. It's just
fighting
amorphous.
An idea, and you're trying to create a personification of it. And
it doesn't,
it
doesn't exist. No, it doesn't work. That's an excellent analogy though. I think it's this idea that you go after this thing, you name it, you know, and you put a face to it, and you say, you know, this is the enemy. This is who it is. This is the problem, I guess. And they're just not getting it. It's not really a problem. I mean, here's the thing, and I wrote this in a piece about this whole issue that we're talking about. It wasn't Hassan Piker, but it was about the internecine, you know, battle in the Democratic Party. Here we have an extremely unpopular president, right? I mean, it's 32%, and it's a midterm. Looks really good for the Democrats. I mean, at least you'd have to go on the assumption that you've got one of the best chances you've had in years to elect some new blood into the party. Why wouldn't the progressives in the party, whether it's DSA or just, you know, regular old progressive members, whatever, you know, young people, new people, seizing this opportunity to come, push their agenda, push their ideas, they talk about things in a different way. We've got a country that's in a total mess. It's completely chaotic. We've got an absolute nutcase running things. Of course the Democrats should have new blood, new ideas, new people coming in here. The idea that you would run a stale old campaign, you know, do Hakeem Jeffries or whatever. I mean, I shouldn't just pick on him, but, you know, it's absolutely true that they're just this idea that you'd play it safe at a moment like this, when actually the worst thing you could do would be to run a very boring, you know, stale kind of, you know, tired message campaign about kitchen table issues. I mean, come on. That's not where we're at in this country right now.
It's hard for me. I think, you know, And now, what, you know, we've been having conversations like this for publication for literally 2 decades plus.
Yeah.
It is hard for me still to disaggregate, and in some ways even harder now for me to disaggregate incompetence and just general incompetence, or an incompetence that is bred by the constraints of an ideology.
Yeah, it's always been that way. I agree.
And, you know, I guess it's the evil or stupid question, and sometimes it can be both. But I think a lot of what we're seeing here is not a temerity about, you know, getting out there and getting into people's faces and having a bold agenda as much as it is a desire not to have those things and undercut the power base that is pushing for those things. Like, I think we're seeing a fight rather than, you know, I think we're seeing a strategic fight, not a tactical one, a fight over tactics. I think we're seeing a fight over, like, ideology as opposed to tactics. It just so happens that that ideology is so bankrupt that they, tactically they have nothing to offer in this context. Yeah. But I'm not sure.
Yeah, I mean, they're stale.
It maintains their party and their power.
Yeah, and they have a lot of money behind it. There's a lot of reasons beyond ideology, you know, just personal self-interest, I think, in a lot of these cases.
100%.
The incentives in American politics are pretty obvious for people to, you know, kind of look out for number one, which they often do. And if their careers are over, they've got futures in all kinds of places where progressive politics are not going to be popular. Let's just put it that way. Right. So, you know, there's a lot of that as well. And, you know, and we know that. But, it, you know, this is like a tide coming in. It's just you can't keep going with what we've been. I mean, in all these years that you and I've been talking, this has been the process, right? I mean, we started off railing against the DLC and railing against the New Democrats and the Blue Dogs and that whole thing. I mean, this has been going on. This fight has been going on, this ideological battle, because and it goes way back before us, too. I mean, this goes back to the 1980s when they realized that, you know, the rise of Newt Gingrich and the Reagan Revolution and all that stuff. I mean, this is, you know, I suppose like, in the long sweep of history.
Group. Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, this has been going on for a long time. I mean, Bill Clinton was the first, you know, he was going to be the new Democrat guy. Right. That's what they did. So this has been happening. I think it's culminating now. This is the end. And it's generational, partly because these are people who grew up in that era. I mean, I grew up in that era, so I know what it was. I mean, I remember the concepts. But by the early 2000s, people like you and I were seeing what was happening there. I mean, I rejected that all of that stuff, you know, 20 plus years ago. I went, wait a minute, you know, but 25 years ago. Wait, what are we talking about here? We're selling our souls for money and we're, you know, destroying the legacy, what I believed in of FDR and the New Deal. Right. And that was my idea of what a true liberal, progressive, whatever was going to be. And they sold that out, you know, a long time ago. And I think that that is finally now kind of coming to an end, that this, it has finally, you know, in this, with Donald Trump, you know, being the kind of culmination of this dynamic between these two parties and where the failure, it hit, this is it, it has collapsed on them. And, you know, and so I'm hopeful. I mean, I found it so interesting, like Florida, for instance, you know, the election of Nixon down there, or the nomination of Nixon down there. I mean, I was just stunned. And I'm going, wow. Okay, so, you know.
Lindman had tens of millions of dollars.
And lots of money. He was well known. He had a national profile. And I don't, you know, and it wasn't just, you know, it wasn't just Israel. And I don't think it's that, you know, the resistance is dead. You know, a lot of pundits that made that shallow analysis. That's not what's happening. What happened was, is that she came in there with this, with an agenda and a group of ideas and an energy, a new energy, a thing. And so, you know, let's just let this happen and see what goes on. I mean, the other side is destroying itself. And we can help. I mean, I'm all for destroying Donald Trump and MAGA and everything else. I mean, I will not give up on that because they are, you know, a blight on humanity. Everything about them is horrible. Just what they're doing to immigrants alone is just, it's an absolute nightmare. But, you know, so some new ideas are coming in here. Good. God knows.
Well,
it's overdue.
Those people who hold the old ideas are not going to let go of power. It's
no, they're biting it every step of the way.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Heather Parton, always a pleasure. We will, of course, link to Hullabaloo, your Uber blog, and your columns at Salon.com. Can't wait until we are at the unveiling of the first Hassan Piker statue built
of course,
in Washington, D.C.
That's a
bronze statue. And then, of course,
riding a horse, yeah.
All across the country, yes.
Of course.
All in the Twitch camps that we are sent to, where we have to stream for 8 hours a day and toil away.
Oh, my God.
In
oh, my
Twitch
God. Yes.
Re-education camps. Heather Digby, Heather Parton, always a pleasure.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks. Have a great weekend.
You too.
We're back. Matt Leck, a little guest here. Ryan/RM Brown of the RM Brown YouTube channel, which everyone should watch, which I know Tim Heidecker starts his day off with.
He does. I heard about that.
Which is, I do too, but I'm mainly just trying to steal your content for the fun half.
Just farming.
Yeah.
I'm just saving you having to watch Tim Pool
exactly.
for
I mean,
4 hours.
It's honestly like when like one guy goes into Chernobyl to try to do something, and then it's like, well, he can only expose himself for so much. RM is the guy that we actually have taken point on, the exposing himself to the radioactive.
And I am mutated. I am like pretty mutated at this point. You're like, well, he's already kind of gone. He's got like a you know, extra foot and stuff. So
I do want to not let this one pass here. We got a call for a birthday shofar, and then we'll get to plugs and yes. get into the fun half here. But let's see. What is this? Could I please get a birthday shofar for my sister in spirit, Kelly? Gone 2 years but not forgotten. Thanks for believing in me. That's from Kalani. Shofar here.
Hey. Exciting.
What's going on in the RM Brown universe?
Oh my God, where to start? I did want to apologize for leaking that game the past week. We were talking about that. I'm sorry I did that.
Oh, I told you, like, I mean, off mic, I told you, like, it would be okay to leak that stuff, but do it for the laborers. But you just did it for your crypto.
You're right. That would have been much better branding. Like, oh man, the working conditions at that company that is unnamed. Well, it's so bad. I'm doing it for like a Robin Hood kind of guy. But I did. I guess how
you
much
did it
I
for
made
the Robin Hood app.
I did it for the Robin Hood. Yeah. Instead of being a Robin Hood, I did it for my Robin Hood app. Guess how much I made on that crypto? $800.
Okay.
Yeah. So not bad.
It's like a week of rent in New York City.
I know.
So that's not nothing.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's what's going on.
That's what's up. Pretty busy.
Very nice. It comes out 3 days a week publicly, and then 2 days a week over for Patreon for supporters patrons. Like myself.
Yep.
I have a show.
Love it.
I got actually a couple of them besides.
I watch that
I mean, besides
show.
This one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I've taken over this one. You've already got two other ones.
Ryan, did you hear how many views we got? The show that I hosted yesterday, 65,000.
Oh!
A little bit above average.
You should have plugged your crypto. You should have had your little crypto
icon. I do need to figure out LeckCoin and how... I need to Google what a rug pull is first.
Hell yeah. Hell yeah.
But yeah, we got a Jacobin show. Daniel Bessner talking about imperialist realism, and him and Griscom go into depth on a number of things, including the end of ideology, did capitalism win, broadly speaking, where is any hope for kind of pushback, and are we in a really... What is this era of intense cynicism in foreign policy... mean. So check that out right after the show today, and the Jacobin Meg YouTube channel at 3 o'clock Eastern time, and then we'll have a Sunday show for supporters of Left Reckoning at patreon.com/leftreckoning. So that is that for plugs, unless Brian, do you have anything you would like to plug? Join the majorityreport.com in case, you know, there's a bill passed saying people who associate with us on Fiverr can't be on YouTube anymore. which you know, I think Brad Sherman and John Ossoff, Snake in the Grass. Come on, John. Like, you can't documentary pizzazz your way out of being a pushover, or worse. But we'll maybe talk about John Ossoff in the fun half, which we're going to get to right at this moment now.
3 months from now, 6 months from now, 9 months from now, and I don't think it's going to be the same as it looks like in 6 months from now, and I don't know if it's necessarily going to be better 6 months from now than it is 3 months from now, but I think around 18 months out, we're going to look back and go like, wow.
What? What is that going on?
It's nuts.
Wait a second. Hold on for a second. The Majority Report. Emma, welcome to the program.
Fun. Matt.
Fun. What is up, everyone? Fun. Nomi Key.
You did it. Fun. Let's go, Brandon.
Fun.
Bradley, you want to say hello?
Sorry to disappoint everyone. I'm just a random guy.
It's all the boys today.
Fundamentally false.
No, I'm sorry. Women's...
Stop. Talking for a second. Now let me finish.
Where is this coming from, dude?
But dude, you want to smoke this 7A?
Yes.
Hi, me? Is this me?
Yes.
Is this me?
Is it me?
It is you.
Is this me? Hello, is this me?
I think it is you. Who is you? No sound. Every single freaking day. What's on your mind?
Sports. We can discuss free markets and we can discuss capitalism.
Oh, I'm going to go for that
one. Libertarian.
They're so stupid, though.
Common sense says, of course.
Gobbledygook.
We fucking nailed him.
So what's 79 plus 21?
Challenge Matt.
I'm positively quivering.
I believe 96, I want to say. 857-210-3501. One half. 3/8.
9/11, for instance.
$3,400. $1,900.
$5.43 trillion.
Sold.
It's a zero-sum game.
Actually, you're making me think less of
it. But let me say this.
Poop.
You call it satire. Sam goes with satire.
On top of it all,
yeah.
My favorite part about you is just like every day, all day, like everything you do.
Without a doubt. Hey, buddy, we see you. All right, folks.
It's just the weak being weeded out, obviously.
Yeah, sun's out, guns out. I don't know.
But you should know.
People just don't like to entertain ideas anymore.
I have a question. Who cares?
Our chat is enabled,
wow,
folks.
I love it.
I do love that.
Look, gotta jump. Gotta be quick. I gotta jump.
I'm losing it, bro.
2 o'clock, we're already late, and the guy's being a dick, so screw him. sent to a gulag?
Outrageous.
Like, what is wrong with you?
Love you, bye.
Love you. Bye-bye.
We are back. Majority Report with R.M. Brown.
Thank you for having me, guys.
Thank you for helping me get through this fun half. Let's do a little bit of news first. Mike Lawler, Representative Mike Lawler, asked what the Republican pitch on healthcare is, which I'm very interested in, because for the longest time it's been, let's just repeal Obamacare. And now, well, let's hear what his response is.
But you also have to focus on campaigning, right? And there was a report that Trump's advisors have told Republicans, hey, campaign on health care. It could be your silver bullet going back into your district. So if that is, in fact, true, what is the sell on health care? What are you going to tell the people on health care that the Republicans are doing right?
Well, first of all, what we did was actually strengthen the Medicaid program by rooting out waste, fraud, and abuse, requiring eligibility verification, banning illegal immigrants from collecting benefits, and enacting work requirements for able-bodied adults without dependent children. I'm going to be 40 in just 2 weeks. If you are 39 years old without dependent children and you are refusing to work, shame on you. We're simply saying 20 hours a week, work, go to school, or volunteer, that is reasonable. More,
but you also have to focus on.
So, the healthcare plan is to shame people into going to sell their labor to a capitalist. Hey, if you have cancer or some sort of debilitating condition that needs, you know, long-term care, I mean, you better be having a job to pay for that, right?
Yeah, GameStop.
Especially if you're 39. Which,
yes,
I don't know, like. That's a weird little projection type of thing going on from Mike Lawler there. We also have this Jesse Waters clip, which he
I love this guy. He's a very genuine guy.
And what I kind of do appreciate about this moment is, like, we've dispensed the sort of BS that Republicans care about, like, you know, issues of working people and how hard it is to pay for things.
Right.
Like, they're back to, like, yeah, you're poor, work harder. What are you talking? What are you talking to me for? Ew.
Yeah.
here's Jesse Waters basically making this exact same case.
So I have my own plan for healthcare. It's called the Waters Plan. Number one, the Somali pirates, they stopped stealing our booty. Number two, you slash immigration. That's just a supply and demand issue. No more doctors getting kickbacks from the pharmaceutical companies to prescribe drugs. And how about get a job? Because most companies provide health care. If you're 30 and went to grad school and are an Ethiopian barista like your friend in Colorado, yeah, she doesn't have health insurance because she doesn't work. Also, MAHA, ever heard
now,
of it?
They're, Make America... Referencing Malat Kiros there, the Democratic nominee for House in Colorado. She was a barista, which I also was a barista. I think there's you can take pride in doing that job. That's an important job.
That, I've done that.
Keeps the economy running.
Yeah.
And it basically goes back centuries.
Yeah.
But Malat was a barista because she left a law firm
she
over.
She didn't leave.
Or was she fired?
She was fired.
She's fired from a law firm.
Technically left, just not willingly.
For her position on Israel's genocide in Gaza, which is, you know, something, a detail I probably would have included if I was talking about that issue.
Also, a couple of days ago, we covered that functional unemployment statistic, which so many jobs are keeping people 34 hours or under so that they can't get health insurance.
Right.
When you include that, the functional unemployment reaches like almost 25%. I think we covered it.
Right. And then you also have the situation where, like, okay, let's say, you know, I remember the Caribou Coffee I worked at, they're like, oh, we got a health insurance plan here if you want in on this. But you're making people choose between overly expensive premium or costs for health insurance taken out of their paycheck,
you're getting them to gamble.
Right.
You're like, I want to take a risk, and if you get a broken bone or something or whatever, then you're going to go broke.
You can buy into our company's like not very generous healthcare policies.
Exactly.
Like, wonderful. It is ludicrous that we tie this to employment. And the only reason we do it is not for any point of efficiency, but because these guys like to use it as a whip they can crack on you to get you to go work for a capitalist in your community. It's really sick stuff. I encourage them to lean into that. But keep playing this Jesse Waters thing, because he also gives the game away. Everything that I've been saying about MAHA and how it is a placeholder for state action and that would like take money from rich people and invest it into things we need, like hospitals. MAHA and the RFK stuff was a complete elite a psyop against actually the health of this country.
MAHA? I was so excited about that.
It's really counting on it.
I can't believe it, yeah.
Also, MAHA, ever heard of it? Make America Healthy Again. It's called Eat Right and Exercise. Maybe try that. I do it. And I don't want to go to the doctor for
that's
every
why he's
ache
so
and
jacked.
Pain.
Yeah.
I hurt my knee the other day at the beach.
Let me tell you something, Jesse. You don't have a real job. Like, your entire stuff is you rolling in on a company car and being an asshole for a few hours and then going home and, you know, going to the gym.
And he's been doing that for over a decade, right?
Yeah.
He's been on Fox News.
So, like, as opposed to somebody who, like, works 9 to 5 saying, like, okay, yeah, I'm going to go to the gym now.
Balls on this guy.
I imagine Jesse Waters maybe has a home gym or he goes to Equinox or something like that.
You know what I noticed about him? He's been around for a while and he used to look like a baby. He used to have a kind of a baby face. Now he's turning into an 80s bad principal. You see that? He's got that 80s bad guy principal face is starting to happen. Yeah. But that's just an observation there.
Yeah. That's the Republican healthcare plan. It would be nice if the Democrats had one. Because it used to be the big glaring thing after they had just passed Obamacare that the Republicans, they keep saying they want to repeal it, but they never say what they want to replace it with. Mm. Well, we still have a lot of problems in healthcare. A few of those were addressed by the Affordable Care Act, particularly like letting people stay on their parents' health insurance. The subsidies, which weren't obviously taken up by some states. It was a Band-Aid, and it hasn't been sufficient. And it is still an issue that is driving angst in the electorate. And the response can't just be, well, we're still saving Obamacare. That was so long ago. Like, Joe Biden saying it's a big fucking deal, like, I was in school.
Yeah.
And
a million years ago.
And that's like, we're still trying to coast on that.
Yeah.
Our hospitals are completely closing. Every hospital is understaffed.
Yeah.
And actually, to even go back to what he said there, I still haven't put it. He mentions the Somali pirates taking our booty. I don't know what he means there. But then he says
Minnesota fraud.
Okay, yeah, that is right. That is what he means, which is just ludicrous. Like, that's like, you look at the dollar totals for those fraud, those daycare fraud things, which is like, one, this is a reason why the state and not private contractors should be in charge of this sort of thing. Thank you very much.
Yes.
But also, $4 million.
Right, I know.
Like,
I'm pretty sure it was a white lady, too, who was arrested at the top of that pyramid.
Ringleader.
Yes. Yeah. How many businesses like Joe Rogan's On It, for instance, got way bigger COVID relief sort of payments during that, like a few million dollars for these things, whereas Trump's like pardoning people who are literally just like criminals,
like literally
literal criminal organization running the presidency here.
Maybe we should go to number 5 to see how the Democrats are handling the midterms.
Hakeem
Jeffries. I'm excited about him.
He's trying to keep my heart rate down, but Josh Gottheimer. third way, more like fifth column.
Whoa. Hey,
for
easy.
Folks who don't know what the fifth column is, it goes back to the Spanish Civil War when the fascist government was boasting that they would very quickly retake Madrid because they had people working with them on the inside. Third way has and always has, or is and always has been, working for the Republicans. And I mean, not just the Republicans, but basically the corporate, what do you want to call it, the Uniparty, the deep state, the dictatorship by capitalists in this country. Third way is more concerned with that than they are Democrats winning elections. But here is Josh Gottheimer.
How could you confuse them?
I get them mistaken. I won't apologize for it. They always, Josh Gottheimer talking to, guess who, Dana Bash, talking about Abdul El-Sayed, and let's see if he wants to be helpful in helping the Democrats retake the Senate.
I know this is a hypothetical, but as obviously you're a lifelong Democrat, if you were a Michigan voter, how would you vote in the Senate race?
I've been clear. There's no way I'm ever coming out for El-Sayed right now. And like until, this is a guy who has made it very clear his views toward and has refused to back off his views toward Jewish Americans. And I hope I hope he comes out and clarifies where he is. I also hope that he does the right thing and condemns Hassan Piker clearly and the language very clearly. You know, this is.
Wow. I know this is a hypothetical.
Great. You know what's amazing about this is like how lazy it is. Like, especially the smear.
Here is a compilation of all the Zionists trying to get you to condemn Hassan Piker.
Yes, please.
And here is the response that everyone should give. Every single person. Every single person. Brad Sherman, Cory Booker, Ken Martin, Josh Gottheimer, Dana Bash. You say,
don't piss down my back and tell me it's raining.
And that's all. These people are fools. Our entire media, front page of the Washington Post today. Let me see if I can pull this up real quick. Yeah, there it is. Has Hassan Piker's name on the front of it. Jeff Bezos's Washington Post.
Ugh.
Firebrand complicates Democrats' Senate path. And then the subhead. Abdul El-Sayed has had close ties to Hassan Piker, accused of anti-Semitism. He's only accused of anti-Semitism by fucking lunatics.
Yeah.
And not just any lunatics. Lunatics that have covered your government's hands in blood in the recent years. Namely, Zionists. It is all the people that supported unconditional aid to Israel that continue to still do so. And they need to point the finger because they know that the fingers should be pointing at them. We all need to dismiss this stuff. It is not serious. It is not time for it is not coming from a real place of concern. These are nationalists, Israeli, pro-Israel nationalists. That is what they're concerned with. They're not even American nationalists. They are concerned with a failing country that has completely turned itself into a pariah. And it is not about this election. They're not concerned with electability. They are concerned with Israel losing support. And let me tell you something. Israel will continue to lose support. Hassan could be put onto a SpaceX rocket and sent to a different galaxy. And it won't change the trajectory that this country is on with regards to supporting a country that is an absolutely lunatic, homicidal nation. And that is not just the settlers. There's a reason Benjamin Netanyahu, it's like, oh, Benjamin Netanyahu's done so much to hurt Israel in the eyes of America. I'm sorry. I thought Israel was a democracy. How is he still in charge? How has he been in charge for so long? How is his coalition so fucking right wing that it can only be apologized for? And then briefly we turn back to Hassan Piker. Do not be defensive about this. Do not be apologetic to any of these people. Do not be even really respectful. It is time for everyone to point the finger directly back at every single one of these people. They might even be your lawmakers. A lot of them are editors in newspapers like the Washington Post, who would put that sort of accused of anti-Semitism thing. He's not an anti-Semite. There's not an anti-Semitic bone in Hassan's body. Nothing he said has ever been anti-Semitic. Everyone who's suggesting they're anti-Semitic is actually themselves responsible for the... stochastic violence we'll see against Palestinians or against Jews in this country, because supporting this shit in the Middle East that is active every single day, we're definitely undercovering the types of atrocities still being committed every single day in Gaza and the West Bank. And these people know that the second they shut their mouths, then we are all going to start talking about that more. We need to just dismiss them and start talking about that stuff a little bit more. And we're not going to get any help from Dana Bash or any of these major outlets. So we need to do it ourselves.
Meanwhile, Josh Gottheimer is co-sponsoring a bill or whatever, a condemnation with
Are
Mike
they doing
Waller
another one of those?
Of Hassan Piker.
They're doing wow.
When they come back, that's going to be
what a useless
day
piece
one
of crap.
But here's what's going on over on the Republican side of things. This is a staffer for Mike Collins, who's running against John Ossoff.
Great.
For Senate in Georgia. He posted this picture of himself in Klan robes. And then
look,
also,
let's not rush to judgment on this.
He is a young boy.
The Anti-Defamation League has taught me how you approach these things with how they treat Elon Musk.
Yes.
These are tense times.
Yeah.
And we don't want to go overboard here, because we don't know whether these people support Israel or not.
right. Here's so, another post from him.
Okay. It is a twink, the word twink in all caps, in a swastika format. Interesting.
Hmm.
Okay. And you may be thinking, that's just one guy.
Edgy.
That's edgy. Just one edgy guy who slipped through the cracks. But it turns out Mike Collins' son-in-law, also a prominent white nationalist influencer, who has done things like, let's see, blamed Jews for porn, tweeted out some Nazi polka music lyrics.
great.
So it seems like his whole inner circle is Nazis.
I'm still not sure. I'm not sure about that. I don't think we want to demonize.
Yes, but Hassan Piker needs to be in jail.
Of course these people are Nazis. Like, they are advocating for mass deportations based on race.
Mm-hmm.
All these people, and of course that the Zionists aren't going to emphasize this the way they would Hassan Piker, because these people want for white non-Jewish Europeans what Israel is for white Jews, and like these are just ethno-nationalists. I don't know. There's not really much else to say to that. Again, I keep mentioning the Tony Judt article from the New York Review of Books in 2003. It's in his essay collection, When the Facts Change, because I think it's probably paywalled. But it's called Israel the Alternative. Israel doesn't make sense in a modern context. And they know that. That's why they don't care when they pass laws like the explicitly codifying Jewish supremacy, saying this is a Jewish state, because they're not actually trying to pretend anymore. And we have this entire sort of constellation of politicians that has come up at a time where we're still pretending like the two-state solution is something that they even have a sincere desire to see.
Mm.
They want it all, and they are going to take it all until someone stops them. And that immediate cessation of that should be no, you don't get any support, not defensive weapons, nothing, until you learn to be a good neighbor. And I think that's going to take a lot of hard lessons from Israel before they decide to be that, because they are anything but that right now. They can't stop invading other countries. Israel is, you know, ooh, you're attacking the only Jewish state. Well, how about the only Jewish state starts to specify where its borders are and aren't? Because it is never done people the courtesy of doing that. But anyway, let's move on from this because it pisses me off so much and I'm trying to have a good Friday. That's the thing about Hassan, this Hassan discourse, is just take a note of everybody who is calling him anti-Semitic. Understand they are liars and political enemies. And, you know, maybe we can beat the Republicans with a tent that includes people who are genocide heirs. I think on a practical level, I hope, on a spiritual level, we'll see what that means. Probably haven't covered this in depth enough. I did mention it the other day, but the House Foreign Affairs Committee has 3 new members. House Foreign Affairs Committee is, of course, the committee that will be, if the Democrats take back Congress, in charge of a lot of our foreign policy things. And who's in charge of Middle East? Who's going to be the new ranking member? Josh Gottheimer. Also, Wes Zabel's on there. And Jared Moskowitz. Oh, it's Moskowitz?
Yeah.
Whatever. Interchangeable. But anyway, let's move on to something a little bit more fun here. Now we are going to stay.
That one was fun.
We're going to stay on the topic. Fun. Yeah, yeah. we're gonna stay on the topic of pieces of shit. But this time we're talking about the WNBA. Cameron Brink. I don't know if he's a rookie or a second year a player for the Los Angeles Sparks. Was asked about the Enes Kanter attempt to make himself relevant, and I do really. Appreciate her response. This was at Crypto Arena. which I guess I still want to call the Staples Center, which is still a company. But it's
we got to get rid of all this corporate control.
That's
go
really,
back to the Staples Center.
Not even joking. Like the shift in sports arenas being called things like the Hubert H. Humphrey Metrodome. Hubert H. Humphrey was like a public servant.
Yes.
So now they're being called like Smoothie King Arena. It really shows like the corporate fascist takeover of this country.
Oh my God. So true.
And it's not like these companies are paying for the stadiums. They're just paying because this is ours.
Here, how about this? They do like a raffle almost, and they just name it after a random person who lives there. That'd be hilarious.
Like democracy.
Yeah. Yes.
The Matt Leck Center.
The Matt Leck Center. Yeah. And people would have to look up who you are, you know?
You get some guy who's like not even a sports fan.
Yes. Exactly.
But yeah, here's Cameron Brink talking about Enes Kanter and at Crypto Arena.
I mean, that's like such a big question. For me personally, I think when it comes to the trans issues that I believe you're talking about, I think it's a non-issue, and I think it's people trying to just come for the trans community, and I just don't stand for that. I think what, I don't even know what the f- name is, Enes Kanter, like, he's a stupid piece of and I think a lot of people think that, and I think he's just trying to stay relevant, so I think people are tuned in for the right reasons, and it's great that we can all like talk about things that are important and hard, and you can have your opinions on that. But I think taking something that's like a non-issue right now and just trying to use it for clickbait, for views, for likes, and then targeting a vulnerable community is just really low.
Yeah, I'll take it a little step further. He's not just doing it for likes. He's doing it for a fascist right-wing agenda. If we have that Rapinoe piece, but this is because Republicans don't have anything to talk about and need a campaign issue. And they're like, well, the men and girls sports thing worked really well for us against Kamala Harris.
Bring that back.
So just run it back. It's like the first concert I ever saw was Three Dog Night, and they played Joy to the World twice. Because, you know, sometimes the hits are the only
ones.
Do
you remember that Simpsons joke where he's seeing Bachman Turner Overdrive and they're playing a song
get
and he
to
goes,
the work
play
overtime.
Taking Care of Business. They start playing Taking Care of Business and he goes, get to the part where you say Taking Care of Business. That's the Republicans campaigning right
exactly.
now. But you see what Michael Oller says when they ask him a policy issue. He's like, yeah, we threw off fucking
exactly.
cancer people off of healthcare. And it's like, maybe stick to the trans stuff.
That's why they talk about Hassan and this sort of stuff here. But and I'll also say, like, to people, and a lot of the people that stand up for trans people will always make this little nod toward, you know, it's good for people to express their opinions or whatever. It's not good for these anti-trans people to express your opinions. You should go back into a fucking hole and leave basketball alone. This WNBA season has been great, and I'm a little bit biased because I'm a Minnesota Lynx fan, and we have a rookie who is also probably an MVP candidate in Olivia Miles. She looks like Magic Johnson, who has a three ball, the way she plays. And we're talking about this Sophie Cunningham shit, and here's Megan Rapinoe. She has a show called Why Are You Like This? She comments on this Sophie Cunningham thing here.
I want to address the controversy that is happening right now around trans women in sports. As you know, I've talked about this a lot and will continue to keep talking about this. I don't know Sophie, so I can only project what I see about her beliefs based on her actions. And seeing a picture of her with Riley Gaines after the game told me everything I need to know about what's happening. Riley Gaines has made it her life's mission to exclude trans people from public life. She's directly tied to the Heritage Foundation, the authors of Project 2025 and now 2026, who have now published a report that suggests that they want to repeal Title IX, the very piece of legislation that allowed athletes like Sophie and myself to compete in sports. Sophie has claimed both to love trans people and support Title IX. And this is where I think the accountability with having a major platform is extremely important. You can hear it even in the language being used that the root of trans exclusion is to protect young girls from men. To be clear, I would love to have that conversation, and it's much needed in this country. But it frames the conversation as if we're protecting young girls from men being in WNBA locker rooms. Not happening. It villainizes trans girls as if they're somehow magically older than their peers or are men, when in reality, they are also young girls. These laws are excluding kids. Kids from playing youth sports. Mm-hmm. If we want to have a conversation around elite sports, there are effective policies that have been in place for many years that no one noticed because they worked.
Yep.
So if anybody is taking these talking points as legit or believing they're protecting young girls in sports, I just have to ask, are you serious?
Yeah, it's really well put, especially the you know what she says about there are policies for some if some charlatan like Enos Kanter tried to do something. There are ways to making sure that doesn't happen. And guess what? It will never happen because it's not a real thing.
Keep getting his name wrong. I'm 99% sure it's Enos.
Well, that's the thing.
How do you pronounce that?
So let's play Enos's response.
Is the P silent?
In penis?
Yeah.
I think it's.
Because okay. You'll hear in this clip that Enos / or penis / anus.
We're really having this argument before the show.
Yeah.
Is it penis or anus?
I just want to get it straight for the new segment that we're doing.
Yeah. Well, yeah. And he started it because he called Cameron he called Cameron Brink Cameron Prick.
Yeah.
Oh, I'm just saying, nailed it.
If your name can both either be Megan Rapinoe, thanks for the correction. If your name can both be pronounced or mispronounced anus or penis,
mm-hmm.
Let's not be making Cameron
you
Prick
you might want to go easy on the name target. You pick something else.
Like pretty sure we call that a glass house.
Yeah, exactly. Anus cancer. Anyway, here is here's penis cancer. Talking to Fox News, with a man who very much loves girl sports.
Season ticket holders for the Liberty.
That, let's bring in Enos Kanter Freedom. I don't quite get it, Enos. Maybe you can explain this to me, but I don't think anybody is quite really doing their homework and realizing that you are trying to protect female sports for the females who are playing those sports. And I think that's been lost in translation somewhere.
Pause it, Digital Cookie. You don't need to come
well,
back.
Chat room prick.
My shirt that says, I'm just trying to protect women's sports by barging into and causing a huge distraction at women's sporting events shirt is answering all the questions I've been asked. I can't remember the thing. Anyway, sorry. Sorry. We can play this.
We got to let it run through because this player is odd.
I see that. Yeah.
Look at that thing.
Or whatever her last name is. First of all, watch your mouth and get some media training because that's not how you talk to in front of a camera. And
what?
Secondly, you guys are the ones that have been advocating about male playing in your league and in your team or against your team. Well, here I am. I have arrived, and I have every right to play because I identify as a woman. So for you to come out and act like I shouldn't be playing, you are anti-trans, and it is unacceptable. So instead of giving interviews, I mean, you look like a chopstick to me because you're going to be playing against me next year. So instead of giving interviews, go in the weight room. Put some weight on because you'll be the first person that I'm going to dunk on.
Yeah, we just got this. This is from Megan Rapinoe, very outspoken.
So you look thin and you should put on weight because I'm going to come dunk on you is his response and calling her a prick after saying she should watch her mouth. Couldn't have picked a better spokesperson for this dumbass sort of stunt than that fucking moron, Enes Kanter. And I'll say this. I don't know if I would take any advice from Enes Kanter if I was Cameron Brink, because I would put put Cameron Brink on particularly defensively against Enes Kanter every day of the week. I think it's pretty clear who the normal people are in this debate. It's not the guy saying I'm trans on Fox News, please respect me.
right.
And I'm gonna dunk on you, and you look like chopsticks. Let me just comment on your body. Hey, Enes, I'm gonna start this segment off saying a lot of people don't believe you when they say you're here to protect women's sports. What's your response? Oh yeah, she's pretty skinny. That's exactly there. There is no more honest. There's no better faith proponent of this entire thing than Enes Kanter. They're all Enes Kanters. There is no good faith. Oh, I'm just worried about blah, blah, blah. You're a fucking loser. You've been caught up in a propaganda, like very thin, obvious propaganda. And it was true in 2024 when even some other nominally independent independent YouTube news channels were joining in on this sort of thing. It was very obvious that this is just a jet stream being produced for fascists to fly in. There is nothing serious about competition in sports that requires the government's attention. It's just a bunch of bigots looking to demonize people, and that's all it ever has been.
Getting duped. It's funny that they're still doing this kind of stuff too. Like, I've seen, like, Tim Pool videos, my favorite guy, Tim Pool, my favorite content creator, where he's doing, like, panics about, like, girls in superhero movies still. And it's like, who does this still resonate with when you look at anything outside of this? Like, literally anything.
It is kind of remarkable, like, how much people care about that stuff, and how, I mean, as the whole Gamergate thing, to have been a man and to have spent the last 15 odd years concerned with Hollywood being too inclusive.
Right.
Or video games having playable characters that aren't white men. You are a fucking loser. You blew it. Yeah. You only have one life. You only have one, that's been a life you'll never get back. And you were concerned about what, like, immigrants?
It just feels like such a anger redirection. Like, very obviously, like, people are pissed off. They don't know why. And they're like, here you go.
Yeah.
Here it is, you know?
Well, that's a sort of worrying thing with a lot of these, like the Nick Fuentes type of stuff is like, or the Asmongold.
Yep.
It's like it used to be the case where you'd say, oh, yeah, you're like a loser and no one should want to be like you.
Mm-hmm.
But we've moved past that where people just are like them.
Right.
There is a mass of complete broken people
mm-hmm.
that their main concern is Ghostbusters woke.
Right.
And not that we have a trillionaire for the first time.
Yeah.
That rich people are completely gobbling up everything. Everything, and not just money, but everything you supposedly love.
Mm-hmm.
All the entertainment properties. All like, why doesn't McDonald's look like it used to in the 70s? It's like, it's not because of like HR ladies
mm-hmm.
with liberal arts private degrees. Equity. It's because of capitalists. They yeah. see it as the building as an asset and they want it to be easily bought and sold. And you're worried about this dumb horse shit. Like and in so many respects, it's not sincere. I don't think people are genuinely, I think like dumb people in a drive-by sense can say like, well, maybe the Republicans have a point on the trans issue. Anybody who looks at it at all will come to the exact same conclusion that Megan Rapinoe or Cameron Brink came to. These people are fucking weird. Yeah. They're actually coming for the government policies that made all this possible.
Mm-hmm.
And also, I'll say they just completely destroyed Roe versus Wade and are assaulting women, and it's just by the numbers, largely young women's right to get an abortion in this country. And so they need to be caught. They know they need something to say like, hey, we actually care about women. But that they landed on something so fucking stupid and that so many Americans bought it up, like, people should be ashamed. It is a political problem, and like there needs to be some persuasion about this. But also, anybody who fell for this stuff, particularly people with like I don't know a YouTube show or whatever, you fucking failed. And 100 years from now, you're reading the history books. It's not going to read, oh yeah, the left went crazy, letting children play in the sporting league that they wanted to.
Right.
They're going to say America was getting passed by China technologically. The ice caps were melting, causing apocalyptic scenes. And these dumb motherfuckers were rounding up immigrants.
Mm-hmm. And hoarding all the wealth for eight guys.
Exactly. Yeah.
Biggest income equality.
And the richest people on the world, as the world was burning, said, just give it a couple more years, and our fancy machine is going to give you every fucking wish you could ever want. Sam Altman literally said, AI is going to be a genie that can grant you any wish. By what year, Sam? And if it doesn't come by that year, we'll give you one grace year. How about this? One of these people, Bill Gates, we talked about him yesterday, put a year on it. Let us know when we should expect all of this abundance. And if it doesn't come, then we can decide what happens to you. Let's move on.
Before you see that idea fully through. What does happen to Bill Gates, Matt?
Re-education with a tablet with some of the finest educational programs on it.
I don't know if this is real, but Van Jones, I'm baffled by this. He has a YouTube channel, and it's so poorly viewed that I can't figure out if it's actually his. And he did an interview with Bill Gates that, right, I checked yesterday, has like 300 views.
That's awesome.
I know. I was like, ah, this is great. And I was like, this has got to be like a fake channel or something. And I clicked over to his Substack. I'm like, oh my God, this is real. This is real. There's no organic.
Yeah.
I don't think there's any organic audience for Van Jones. And I think people are like not a fan of like these Bill Gates, you know, pieces anymore.
Yeah, like I'm trying to think about this because, like, you know, we are seeing a media that is completely just disgusting. Yeah, 12,000 he's got with the Bill Gates on AI global risk comparison.
Okay, he got up to 12K. Okay,
something boosted him. Yeah,
yeah,
but so the media. We've talked about this a little bit before, but it isn't just like decisions that are making the media worse. It is a fundamental like economic shift
mm-hmm.
that's happening, a long-term shift that's with regards to advertising.
Right.
Advertising was the main reason that you could have papers in even like cities that were completely profitable. But then slowly you get the introduction of radio, you get the introduction of TV, you get the introduction of, and then largely the internet. And all of a sudden that ad sort of monopoly they had is gone. And so employment of journalists and people involved in media, print, the press has been going down for decades and decades and decades and decades, as long as we've been alive. And the employment of PR professionals, and no offense, but people who lie on behalf of the businesses that they work for, or put the best gloss on whatever, that employment is going up. This is a structural shift going on in our ability to interpret the world. And I remember when Sam got fired from MSNBC because of the Cernovich thing.
I remember that. Yeah.
And one of the arguments he made is like, if a it was kind of like a take me or leave me, but like if a media company cannot determine that what the was his tweets were jokes and actually on the right side of the issue that they reportedly that they were talking about with regards to Roman Polanski. If a news organization can't determine that those are jokes and that the people talking about it are bad faith, they don't deserve to be a news organization.
Oh yeah.
The Washington Post had that Hassan Piker thing on the front page.
No, you kept bringing up Adam Johnson's tweet. I've been reading. I just finished that guy's book. The media is like cooked.
Yeah,
like that book is like the should be for everybody. If you haven't read it, nail in the coffin. It's criminal. They're just a criminal organization.
I mean, and these are like actionable. And I don't like the idea of suing over speech. But to say somebody is an anti-Semite and wouldn't even deny that they're an anti-Semite, or to say that they, what did Brad Sherman say that he like endorsed or approved of the rape of little girls?
Also, Scott Jennings said something about lynching black.
Hassan wants to lynch black. Like,
That seems borderline. I mean, I'm into like free speech stuff, but like that seems like borderline defamation case.
Libel.
The thing that I have a problem with is like the people in my family or circle that follow politics, and every once in a while they'll know like, oh, I need to lock in.
Mm-hmm.
I need to get more political media in my diet to know what's going on in the world. They turn on the TV. They shouldn't do that. Like that it's not redeemable.
Yeah.
And like, I think Sam and Emma should go on those shows whenever they can. I think I'm participatory in that way.
Yeah.
Especially when you have intent and know what time it is with those things. But in terms of like recommending somebody, no, open up a newspaper. I mean, even though I said the Washington Post, like at least you will, I wouldn't actually say do the Washington Post. I would say do the Financial Times.
Yeah.
But the television media in particular, what is the best expose you've seen television news break? Like they don't do.
Never.
Phil Williams and Kyle Clark are the only two that come to mind, and they're local.
Right. Exactly. That's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a good point. But nobody else is doing really good work in that. And to the extent that shows like ours, Matt Leck hosted Majority Report, got 61,000 YouTube views yesterday. I don't know if
CNN invite.
I don't know if I mentioned it, but
Abby Phillip, dude, right next to Scott.
You would see me on that exactly one time, I'm pretty convinced.
Well, you'd probably get arrested.
Sorry, guys, I'm not going to be in tomorrow. I don't lament it. If that stuff collapses,
yeah,
I'm not going to miss it. And if we do return to, and so what will take its place is more partisan media, which I think is fine. I think this country had its most progress in like at times where, you had radical Republicans talking about in abolitionist papers. I think that sort of stuff was good.
Mm-hmm.
the problem is, like, you're never going to have the institutional ability of investigations like we used to. That capacity is being hollowed out, and it is bad. It is so horrible.
Okay.
Because, like, yes. Say, like Chapel Trap House, mm-hmm. probably the biggest success in our field here, in our sort of circle. If they started hiring out, like, they make good money for how small of an operation they are. But you start trying to hire out, you're not getting the revenue of even, like, the Des Moines Register in, like, 1972.
Right.
And so we have, like, the plug has been pulled out of the bottom.
Yeah.
And we're really, like, circling the drain.
Well, this is, like, a good case for, like, the people who are doing this. Like, there's that guy. There's a guy who – and there's a demand. There's for sure demand for what you're talking about, real investigation.
Yep.
There's a guy, I can't remember who he is, but he's really made a name for himself on YouTube for investigating Flock. You know that guy? If you could bring him up, and he
Jessica Burbank did a lot on Flock.
Jessica Burbank and Jessica Burbank teamed up with this guy to go to, like, local Flock meetings. But he did a thing where he basically did, like, a counter surveillance thing on Flock, and so he's kind of doing investigatory stuff. And I've never seen something like this from an investigative journalist. He's doing, like, actual, like, electronic counter surveillance on them. Like, they wouldn't let him into a Flock, like, investor meeting and, like, what would you call it? Like, you know, expansion, where they're trying
to
expand.
Is it Ben Jordan?
Yes, Ben Jordan.
Yeah.
But so people like this who are doing this independently, if they could get more, like, independent, you know, like, people subscribing, I mean, then.
Well, that shows the promise and the sort of challenge in the same thing. It's like, that guy has a very... an agenda.
Yeah.
It is a good one. It is a righteous one.
Yep.
But also, like, and there will be people who do heroic work like that.
Like Nick Shirley.
But of course, Nick Shirley exposing all the fraud.
I like Flock. I like Flock a lot.
But also, like, they are exposed.
Yeah.
And if a lawsuit comes, you know, it's easier to intimidate somebody than it is if he has the backing of a sort of news organization. Now,
yes.
There's also a case from Gabriel Sherman's book on Roger Ailes. I think it's called The Loudest Voice in the Room, where Roger Ailes was getting mad at a blogger who was criticizing Fox News.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, we're going to take him out of business. He's like, I'm just a guy with a blog. You're going to, like... sue to take my blog.
Right.
Okay.
Right. Yeah.
Okay. It's sort of the problem, like, America has when you get into wars with countries. It's like, oh, I guess we got to shoot some Jeeps with, like, $3 million missiles.
Yep.
But
The Insider. I just rewatched The Insider. And, you know.
Which one is that?
That's the one with Al Pacino. It holds up pretty well, but it's CBS. And it's basically like they're doing this expose on tobacco. They get a whistleblower, and it's just like, it's just a whole thing about because it's from both sides. Like, CBS doesn't want to get sued by the tobacco industry, but it shows, like, how litigious, like, what the tobacco industry was doing, where it's like, anybody who says anything, we immediately, like, come down on them, like, really hard, so there's, like, less press about it.
Yeah. Read some IMs here. Matt Taibbi was right years ago when he pointed out the failure of news orgs to criticize each other.
Man, has he still been doing the same great work? Probably, right? Same exact guy? Hasn't changed at all?
I produced a podcast for Matt Taibbi. I don't remember that point of emphasis from him. Hassan laughing about Nick Shirley's Velcro shoes almost killed me.
Nick Shirley wears Velcro shoes?
Probably.
Or that's a joke. I'm not sure.
That's the problem with Nick Shirley.
It's believable.
Yeah. We can't. It's believable. What do you mean by the word believable?
Glenn, you know what? His content would be fine if it weren't like... right wing, if it was just him wandering around whatever Cuba and just like, oh, I'm gonna talk to somebody, and he's just like making a goofball of himself, great content.
Oh,
Nick Shirley in Cuba.
Just Nick Shirley in Cuba. No, not political at all. Just him making, you know, bumbling around, you know, trying local food. Fine.
Learning how to make a mojo sauce.
Yes. Yes, exactly.
We have an IM here from Punch Drunk Pulpit. Matt, I work at More Perfect Union. We are trying our best. More Perfect Union does a great job. Everyone should follow.
Yeah, 404. There's a lot of people doing great work.
Yeah.
The lever, this is actually like a kind of important point, is it's not going to take, like, 12 heroic efforts are not going to be able to change the tide that we are seeing. We are seeing a climate change in our media.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, we do need to have more organizations that have, like, Zateo, like Dropsite, that are
Dropsite, really good,
right? Like, that have they're clear about we're not trying to be news from nowhere. We're not trying to just, it's just the objective, like the New York Times, their slogan is all the news that's fit to print,
mm-hmm.
Which is just. It's always been a ludicrous, like, sort of thing. Like, of course, that's not the case. That's a bedtime story they're telling their audiences. But that's really, like, a danger with media, is it is marketed to you as if it is the solution.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just need to tap into our feed and you will know the world.
Yeah.
And obviously, there's a degree of truth to it. People who follow news and read history and that stuff, you are informed. But you have to understand that, like, it's coming from someplace. Mm-hmm. Rupert Murdoch doesn't own the Wall Street Journal because he loves knowledge.
Yeah, exactly. Right? It's so sad. Like, it does make me sad. I was talking to an older person, and it's so sad to see somebody who, like, trusts the media. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, yeah, you should be able to. Like, what? This thing lied to me? That's
the richest,
unbelievable.
The rich people like Bill Ackman are now saying that they'd love to pay more taxes.
Mm-hmm.
And this inequality stuff has got to change.
Mm.
But did you see what Nick Shirley has shown that the governments will do with it?
Yes.
We will pay the taxes once you take care of the Nick Shirley stuff.
Oh.
And
thank you, Nick.
That's so embarrassing,
mm-hmm.
for our society that's taken seriously. That, oh yes, of course these guys would love to pay taxes. They just want to make sure it's done officially. And our lords of creation in the capitalist class, they know how to invest correctly.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to blow up in all of our faces, I think, with how little we've been investing into a crumbling infrastructure and state capacity, and how much we've been investing into speculative enterprises, whether it's crypto or this AI, advanced generative intelligence. Again, AI, I know there's some IMers a little bit sensitive to this. There are utilities to computers getting really fast and having access to a lot of data,
mm-hmm.
and language models, et cetera, et cetera. It's not going to create advanced generative intelligence. It's just not. Clip it. If I'm wrong, tell the AI to, you know, put me in the.
Well, no, it's going
to do to you what you were going to do to Bill Gates when he's proven right.
Yeah, exactly. That's where I was going to go. Yeah. When it becomes our Lord and Savior, you will be, your judgment will be cast upon you. So that's for God to decide.
Yeah. Do you want to do AI. This Mamdani thing?
Yeah, I just feel like something nice.
A little palate cleanser. There's maybe.
Ooh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah, I wasn't quite sure why this kept coming up on the sound sheet, even though I am a big fan of Mamdani.
Did you guys cover the heat out of the subway thing? Did you see that?
I know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
About plans to use the heat of the subway to heat buildings.
What do you think of that?
Great idea. Yeah. I tweeted about that saying, this is awesome, and people were like, this is actually an old...
It's an old idea.
That
who cares? Do it.
Yeah, do it. Exactly. Yeah, why not try it? Yeah,
do it and take credit for it and say you know what I mean.
And then like, put it in every apartment so we don't have to pay heat for heat during the, you know, just put the subway heat.
Here is this announcement here.
Everyone, my name is Maxime and I'm really happy to be here today. Thank you, Mayor Mamdani, for inviting me. I really appreciate it. Well, do you guys want to know how I ended up here? About 2 months ago, I recorded a video asking Mayor Mamdani to help open the playground in McKinley Park. It had been closed for almost 2 years. But guess what? A few weeks later, the park was finally open. So thank you, Mayor Mamdani and NYC Parks, for hearing me out. I really appreciate it. I'm really passionate about parks being opened because kids need a safe and fun environment to play in. My parents always told me that my voice matters, and I want to thank them for believing in me and encouraging me to speak up. And I want other kids to know that your voice matters too. If you see something that needs to be changed, never be afraid to speak up. Thank you to the Renew crew and every team member working hard to make New York City a better place to live. And thank you, Mayor Mamdani. Let's keep the New York City parks open for kids.
And I'd like to call
unbelievable.
For, yeah, this is so cute. I'd like to call for a work shutdown until our demands are met.
What if a he general went, strike?
Yeah. What if he went full...
Yeah, although I don't believe in electoral politics. Exactly. At all.
Like, we must not look at electoral politics as the be all end all for revolutionary change.
To quote Fidel Castro,
until I'm canoeing in a river of capitalist blood, I will continue to fight.
That was a chicken soup for the.
Yeah, that's a cute kid.
I know. It's just like shit like that. I'm like, man, I'm so glad I moved here.
Yeah, totally. You know,
people are saying this, Nick Shirley should get tutored by this kid.
Yes.
That kid's going
to be I mean, that's like 100 times better public speaker than Nick Shirley. But you know what? Maybe we're being ableist. Nick Shirley might have bumped his head or something, I think.
But yeah, like all these people bumped their head.
They bumped their head. That's
Trump
true.
Probably bumped his head. Yeah. He got head bumps going on like crazy.
A lot of head bonks.
Speaking of head bumps, let's do Michael Knowles here.
Oh, one of the foremost head bumped individuals.
The big thing about Hassan Piker is that they're talking about is like the 9/11 comments, which he apologized for. And that he would express differently, obviously. And some... complete BS about him being anti-Semitic because he made the obvious claim that that the Zionist project is leading to worldwide rises in anti-Semitism, and to the extent we are seeing a rise in anti-Semitism is the fault of Zionists. That is uncontroversial in this house. But here is Michael Knowles, because there's another thing that these right-wingers, particularly the online ones, get upset about. And that is Hassan mocking Charlie Kirk by doing a dance. And I do want to play this before we leave today. They are very mad, and a comedy is once again. Where is this? Where's the Law and Order one? Come on. It is now illegal.
So comedy's illegal now.
You just play
okay.
It. I'll find it.
To take her shirt off just to show you her tummy, just to see if we have the... Do we have the clip? We don't have the clip. The producers... I'm tempted to say the producers have failed me. Maybe they've helped me. Maybe they've bailed me out from... Okay, we'll get to AOC stripping in a moment. First, though...
What a tease.
Let's talk about Hassan Piker. Hassan Piker is on a tour. He's doing live podcast shows. This is not the usual campus tour that the conservatives do, where the conservatives show up to schools and then audiences come. They show up because there are a lot of curious young people who might be conservative, and then there are hordes of leftists who want to throw rotten tomatoes at us. This is a much more manicured thing. They sold tickets to this, packed out some theater. And how does Hassan Piker kick off the tour? He kicks it off by singing and dancing, joking about Charlie Kirk's assassination.
Yeah.
Do you get it? Do you get the joke? They murdered him. Do you get the joke? A leftist made good on the many and increasing threats that leftists have made against right-wingers speaking on campus for a decade.
No,
not one of them made good on those threats and murdered him. And that's really funny to Hassan Piker. That's a big joke. He's not just going to laugh about it on his live stream. He's not just going to make snide remarks. He's not just going to justify it and defend it.
Let's talk about this.
This joke is so funny. Like everything. I forgot about this guy.
The set.
Votive candle.
Yes, I'll take
the cigars.
I'll take a cigar. Thanks for the offer. And he's in like a Victorian salon. Like, he's not doing the like right-wing tough guy thing. Well, at all.
He can't.
You don't see those liberal tears on that Tumblr? It says liberal tears.
Liberal tears. That set looks like it has a fainting couch somewhere, though.
And he's got, what are the, like, Funko Pop Jesus and Mary there on the bottom?
Yes. Yes.
Imagine thinking about conservatives as much as they think about leftists. Like, I need a whole mug.
I know.
About this.
Conservative diarrhea.
This whole thing about like the We Are Charlie Kirk is people celebrating the death of Charlie Kirk. Well, first of all, Charlie Kirk was a nasty guy, and I don't think that people should be demonized for not being. You shouldn't. This isn't a celebration of death. What this is, and why this became so viral, is because you, Michael Knowles, and the Daily Wire. And J.D. Vance and the presidency and the entire administration, the entire Republican Party, in fact, attempted to use Charlie Kirk's death, which is still unclear to me, like what the ideological motives are. I'm not following that case really much at all. I hear Candace Owens has some interesting things to say about it.
I should look into that. Yeah.
I saw she did a debate about it recently. Mm. But I don't know that any of that's been proven at all. But what is proven is that y'all wanted to use this as like Horst Wessel was used by the Nazis to completely trample on constitutional rights in this country. Mm-hmm. And before people like Hassan or the Majority Report or whoever on the left could really even get people ready to resist that, young people organically already did.
Yep.
They were already doing it. Like, no, you will not tell me that I will get fired for not celebrating this guy who was a Jim Crowite. Mm-hmm. Charlie Kirk, towards the end of his life, was not pivoting away from Israel. He was getting mad at some Zionist donors for trying to lean on him, which is a different thing. But he was moving against Martin Luther King Jr. Mm-hmm. His opinions were shifting against Martin Luther King. He used to be much more favorable to them. He said the Civil Rights Act was a mistake. Charlie Kirk was, as far as I'm concerned, a neo-Confederate. And it is disgusting that we're renaming highways after him and that anybody suggests that he did things the right way. Go look at his debate he did with Ben Burgess. He has an entire cheat sheet that he's paging through the entire time that he's debating Ben Burgess. He is not some debate maven. He had talking points literally, I'm using that word correctly, printed out that he could consult when he debated adults.
Yep.
And I imagine he had it there when he was debating teenagers as well. It's horrific that we have gun violence in this country. By the way, Charlie Kirk's last breath was spent minimizing that reality. His last words, I believe, were, counting or not counting gang violence. You should reflect a little bit, but of course, like that's not that's not anything a right winger is going to do about that. So you can cry all you want. This wasn't like Charlie when everyone would come and love him, and I guess some people would hate him. It was just people dancing in theater. People are sick of this attempt to drive this sentiment, whether it's this anti-trans stuff or all these, pre-cooked narratives about what happened with Charlie Kirk. Because, I mean, you cannot get a shooting in this country now without these people rushing to say that it was actually a trans person did a shooting. Like, so Michael Knowles, keep crying is all I have to say. And Candace Owens, keep looking for the truth. Don't let these
stay on it. Stay on the trail, Candace.
Yeah, exactly. Anything else we want to get to before we call it a day? I'll look at some IMs here.
Yeah, what are the people?
Do you want to watch how policy is made in real time when Glenn Beck suggests something to Donald Trump, and then 3 days later it becomes a point of policy?
I think
for
Glenn
him.
Beck is AI generated.
Now at this point, yeah. Let's see. Honestly, I forgot Glenn Beck
exists.
He exists, really.
He is such an odd. Everything about him, his face, the way he talks, is a very. He's just a weird. Weird being.
Yeah, you know, sorry. One, not Sam Cedar points out, having a cup that says leftist tears while you're literally crying about what leftists are doing. I know.
That's like the Tim Pool, I'm licking my own boot, I'm sucking my own D type stuff.
I'm sucking my own what?
Oh, I didn't want to use a bad. I didn't use want to use a bad.
Oh,
word.
Oh!
I think I got that from you guys, where he was talking about how he's the one wearing the boots.
Oh, I'm
or
the
whatever.
Boot.
I'm the boot.
I'm the boot.
I'm the boot.
I'm not licking the boot. I am the boot.
It's yeah. The Walter White.
Me, a podcaster who leaves the state when he hears a gunfire. Right. During
I'm the one who licks the boot.
Also, Hassan is carrying the flame. Yeah, you're right. Socialist blue dot.
He's carrying the flame. That he would. That
is I would have forgot about Charlie Kirk if I had not seen him sing that song.
Yes,
it's so exactly. Funny when right wingers are trying to cancel Hassan. Hassan's response is, "You're not carrying the flame for Charlie Kirk. Charlie Kirk, because it is true." When people, we'll move on, but the idea that Hassan wanted Charlie Kirk to die is so fucking stupid.
Crazy.
Like, Hassan was going to debate Charlie Kirk. And what were they going to debate? Israel.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't going to be Charlie Kirk saying, hey, I agree with Hassan Piker. We should not support Israel so much. Mm-hmm. And so I guess Candace Owens should feel lucky that that debate never happened, because her narrative would be blown out of the water. But
Do you think she cares at all? Or do you think it's purely... I really think she is a pure media opportunist and, like, profit maximizer. Candace
Owens, yeah. No, I agree.
You think so?
Yeah.
I think she saw an opening. I don't think she ever believed any right-wing political stuff, and maybe she was even looking to get out of it.
I haven't followed it super closely, but I do... There's, like, the theory that I think Tim Pool raised that, like... Her and Charlie actually weren't as close as she says.
They were
the
business.
End.
They were business.
Yeah,
I think it's purely business.
Also, the texts they sent together, where Charlie was queening out about Nicki Minaj, they did have a certain relationship. It is crazy, objectively, what Candace is doing to somebody who she knew and who was murdered in a horrific fashion.
Yeah. Well, how about this to me? I think she's kind of interesting, because I was watching her a lot before this started, and she read that Tom O'Neill book, Chaos.
Yeah.
Have you read that book?
Yeah, yeah.
It's literally about a guy who is, like, kind of persecuted. His life is kind of falling apart because he's uncovering a conspiracy. That kind of sounds familiar. You know what I mean? It kind of... And she was talking about that book every day before the Charlie Kirk thing.
Yeah, I don't know what I think about that book, to be honest.
Something you pointed out, though, is that she merged the true crime audience with a political... Like, she's doing true crime
in real
time with Charlie Kirk, but she's also a character and a narrator.
Yes, and Tom O'Neill.
And just printed $1 billion off
of it. Totally. Yeah, totally. It's a compelling format.
It's the hottest type... And that's why comedians are talking about politics so much, is because people are... We're in a political crisis, and people are ready to tune
in. They're kind of interested.
And you add that with true crime. Yeah. It's fascinating. Glenn Greenwald decided to chime in on you criticizing Anna Kasparian for platforming Candace Owens. I told him to go F off, and he blocked me. I'm also blocked by Glenn Greenwald. Glenn Greenwald, Glenn Greenwald is, he does some good.
He's all over the place.
He does some good heroic work. I think sometimes that comes from a oppositional defiance disorder, but we'll take it.
Yeah.
He also like thinks you're stupid because I remember him talking about like Republicans voter, some voter bullshit like 5 years ago. And the libertarian side of him never really like, and his openness to Republicans acting like Democrats are being hysterical in resisting these Republicans' effort to like make sure no illegals are voting. It's all a fucking lie.
Mm-hmm.
It's as lie the way they're lying the way Zionists lie, Glenn. The Republican Party lies about voting and immigrants the way Zionists lie. So I'm not really sensitive to that. Good luck to him on Rumble or wherever the fuck he's at these days.
Yeah, he was like a little, I watched some old videos about it with him the past couple days. He was a little bit like, oh yeah, maybe the Trump people will do some of this, like Snowden type stuff. I found a PBD interview where they're kind of speculating maybe they'll pardon Assange and Snowden. And it's like, look at what they're doing now. Are you like, Glenn, it's the same with Dave Smith.
Yeah.
I watch a lot of Dave Smith stuff, and he's like, it's like, if you couldn't call this, why is anybody still listening to you?
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
I mean, the funny thing about Glenn is him taking that early victory lap in, like, the first months of Trump's administration, being like, see the left? Trump is going to slash military budgets.
Yeah.
How'd that work out?
Well, he
started a fucking war in Iran, dumbass.
And also, like, literally stuff that's right up Glenn's fame alley. Like just yesterday they did this thing with A/I. Have you heard about this? It's literally like a privacy platform that they're it's literally exactly what Glenn got famous for with Snowden, that they're like terrorizing like Patriot Act stuff to like limit privacy. They're going after like a platform that makes it harder for the government to spy on you.
Basically. Is this based around that Inventa executive order, the Autistica?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, we were looking into that yesterday.
And of course, that's what it is. And of course, like, there's going to be a bunch of lawsuits and stuff. But it's literally, there's no crime. They're just like, oh, we can't read those emails.
Yeah.
You know.
I mean, the crazy thing about Trump and Israel is like, he's proven them wrong in a way that I didn't even foresee, because I was saying like, look, I think you need to, Kamala Harris needs to win. I'm not going to put my reputation on the idea that our Gaza or West Bank or Palestine policy overall is going to be any better.
Yeah, totally.
I was not confident that Kamala Harris would show any backbone at all.
Like a moderate,
but she wouldn't do Project 2025 at home. But like, again, like, I think there is absolute cowardice among the Democratic electors. But I can say I'm pretty sure she wouldn't have bombed Iran and started the Strait of Hormuz shit.
Right.
Like, and so, like, even on that ground, Dave Smith and Glenn Greenwald, well, you know, it's better to trail Candace Owens than to reflect on having discredited yourself in such a horrific way.
Imagine, that's kind of funny. Imagine, like, still going. You know, there's so much evidence of you, like, oh, man.
Dave Smith, no more wars. Dave Smith literally, like, packaged up the entire libertarian movement for this.
Yes. He's on video on the biggest podcast in the world celebrating that all the wars are going to end on the Joe Rogan Show.
He was at their convention, if memory serves, saying, please respect this man. And also, like, what was it, Chase Oliver, the actual libertarian candidate? Like, he's actually the one who had the best policies on, like, things like ICE.
Right.
Than even, like, Kamala Harris or whatever. I mean, you are one of the biggest betrayers of a movement there is.
Yeah.
And now what's Dave Smith? I saw him do this clip of Zora Mamdani used to speak with an African accent. Isn't that a bit weird? Fuck off, you fucking loser.
Yeah, it's the exact...
Comic Dave Smith. Really funny. Really funny guy. When's the new special coming out, Dave?
It's the exact same with all the Hassan Piker stuff. It's like, oh, man. All the, you know, old school media coming out. Oh, man, we got to condemn this guy. And it's like, look at what you've been doing for the past 3 years. Are you insane? Like, he's basically right on everything. You guys are, like, proven criminals. It's crazy.
Yeah.
We are, like, It's kind of interesting. We're living in like a bizarro world that people are starting to say they're starting to come out of the cave or something.
And none of those people, especially the libertarians, like if you, because a lot of libertarians were like, well, but I'm not so libertarian. I don't think we should have highly militarized borders.
Mm-hmm.
So let's just follow this through. I think money in the form of cryptocurrency should be able to bypass borders almost infinitely.
Right.
With the most speed possible.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're a human being, we got guns pointed at you. You try to cross. I would say I would loosen a little bit the restrictions we have towards making people citizens. And I would very strongly tighten the ability of particularly rich people to move money around. And I think that would be better for democracy than this cryptocurrency horseshit that these people have been peddling and making money off of and lending their name to for all these years. And then also supporting the occupation of American cities by federal agents and the funding of those federal agents with a budget that is greater than the FBI's.
Mm-hmm.
And you are the libertarians? I think that's a good place to stop. Ryan, thank you so much. Again, people should check out the R.M. Brown Show on YouTube. It is very, very funny, very addicting show to get your news from. It's very educational. There's a lot of nutritious stuff in there. Behind the sound drops of Sam Cedar saying the word toilet,
mm-hmm.
or
Emma
poopy.
Saying you're a little baby. And,
yeah,
you know, I gotta get you on there.
Yeah, I don't have any sound.
I know. I'm gonna find you saying something vile and clip it out.
Good
of
luck.
Context.
I'm an expert broadcaster that doesn't. That every single word is highly considered.
I'm gonna Hassan Piker you. I'm gonna get something way out of context.
I'm saying we should have compensatory service.
Yeah, get my take on the draft from yesterday.
Yes,
I'm just saying didn't solve all the problems. yeah, Sam will be back. Monday, folks, this is my last sort of hurrah here for a while. Patreon.com/leftreckoning, and have a great weekend.